Good afternoon. It's already noon, so it's good afternoon. It is my pleasure to be here. I want to, first of all, say hello on behalf of DJ Magwood. He would have liked to be here, but unfortunately, well, he's running around. He's actually in Brazil right now. So anyway, he would have liked to be here, and he appreciates all the work that is taking place in the Czech Republic. So what I'm trying to do is very quickly give you an overview of some of the work that we are doing at the OECD Nuclear Energy Agency. So perhaps this will encourage you to read the report. But I guess maybe we need to do a better job distilling the important information so you don't have to read the whole thing. So first of all, I want to remind you what we do at the OECD Nuclear Energy Agency. We are a group, we have 33 member countries, and typically most of the member countries are experienced nuclear energy countries. So basically what we do is a lot of cooperation, a lot of working together to make the most or to get the most out of the recent information or lessons learned or best practices related to nuclear technology and nuclear science. So one thing that I did want to highlight, so every once in a while we also see that perhaps there are groups of countries that have special needs or special interests, and sometimes we put together or we try to put together initiatives that are maybe more regional. So for example, right now the OECD NEA is working on a regional initiative. It's called Regional Initiative for Nuclear Advancement, that is specifically for Eastern European countries, and of course it does include the Czech Republic. So these are the reports that you are supposed to read. No, just kidding. No, so this is a few of the studies that we have published in recent times, and they are focused mostly on electricity supply and nuclear economics. In my division, as you heard, I'm responsible for technology development and economics. So there is like two main work streams. So on the one hand, we do a lot of work on economics and finance of nuclear power, but we also do a lot of work in technology development, innovation, and we try to keep abreast of what's next, what's coming, what is the new trends. So for example, today I am not going to talk very much about SMRs, but what we just did, I guess it was last week or 2 weeks ago, we had a special policy debate within the OECD Nuclear Energy Agency Steering Committee that it was focused on small modular reactors. So as I say, I will not talk about this, but if somebody has questions and I may be able to answer them, I will be happy to. So what I was asked to talk is about the role of nuclear in the future energy systems, taking into account, of course, the fact that we need to deal with climate change, and also we need to ensure sustainable development for everybody. So let me frame a little bit what I'm going to talk about. This is nothing new. I think that a couple of other speakers have put this slide or something very similar. The fact that despite all our efforts, the global energy-related carbon emissions continue to grow. So that's clearly not good news. And in fact, 2018 was a year which we especially experienced a particularly large spike in CO2 emissions. So to me, what this means is whatever we are doing is not working. So we really need to reassess, reconsider, and perhaps try something different. So another thing that I think is quite important, and this comes from this particular slide, I got it from our sister agency, the International Energy Agency, but I think this is quite striking, and is basically emphasizing the same message. So if you look at the global electricity generation and how it's been divided among the different generation sources for the last 20 years, it essentially hasn't changed. 20 years ago, we have about 36% of our electricity globally that came from clean, low-carbon energy sources, and 20 years later is exactly the same. That, to me, is also very staggering. I mean, so if you look at that graphic, despite all the huge effort and huge investment that we have done to deploy variable renewable energy sources, clearly it's not making a dent. And a huge part of that is because of the fact that we are actually de-emphasizing the use of nuclear energy. So essentially what we have invested in renewables is basically what we have let go from nuclear. So again, not making a lot of progress. So the other thing that I think is important is, despite where we are right now as far as energy and electricity, as we move forward, what we are looking at may be quite different from what we have today. So you probably, again, this is not news, I'm just trying to put it all together, but I think that you all realize that as we try to decarbonize, electricity is going to become the cornerstone of all our energy efforts. So essentially, when you look at most countries, what we are trying to do is, number one, electrify things as much as possible. So we are trying to electrify the industrial sector, we are trying to electrify the transportation sector, and even electrify the building sectors. And then we are trying to decarbonize as much as possible the electricity sector. So this is the overall general approach that we are trying to do. Of course, this means that if we really are serious about decarbonizing the electricity sector, we need to consider all electricity sources, all generation technologies and fuels. And of course, that includes nuclear power, clearly. But that's not the only thing. I think that we all need to realize that the energy and electricity systems of the future are going to be quite different from what we have today. So we are going to have a lot of coupling between all these different sectors, the industrial sector, the mobility sector, the buildings, and of course, electricity. And this is going to demand that we improve our infrastructures and the interconnectivity that we have. Of course, this is going to require a lot of investment. We are going to require quite a lot of flexibility from all generation sources. Essentially, all generation sources need to adapt to this new system and how systems are going to work. And then, in order to be able to support all this investment and all the need for this influx of money that is going to be needed to actually do all this enhancement and improvement of the infrastructures, we really need to rethink and redesign how the markets are going to behave. We really need to make sure that there are going to be, number one, markets that recognize not only the energy, but also the capacity, the flexibility, and perhaps other ancillary services that different energy sources are going to provide. But also, just as importantly, these energy markets of the future do need to have embedded in them signals that are going to allow investors, so they are going to encourage investors to invest in the infrastructure and also in all low carbon energy sources. So and of course, as you may imagine, this is going to require quite a lot of coordination between the industry, of course, but also the governments. We need to align our policies and our regulations to have this overall longer or maybe midterm goal to align all those things together. So, and then on top of all that big framework, I want to remind you the huge challenge that we have in front of us. So if we want to meet the Paris Agreement, we really need to strive to achieve a target of about 50 grams of CO2 per kilowatt hour for electricity generation. So today, in most advanced countries, we are at an emission intensity of about almost 570 grams of carbon of CO2 per kilowatt hour. So this is quite a challenge. I mean, we have to really reduce our emissions, our carbon footprint, in more than that one order of magnitude. So this is quite a challenge. Okay. So, and also, I want to remind you in this big picture, nuclear remains the leading low-carbon energy source in most advanced countries. So this is right now, in 2018, per percentage of generation, but also when we look at the accumulated, the cumulative emissions that have been avoided because of this low carbon energy, that low carbon electricity that nuclear has provided. Now, and of course, Laszlo Barro is going to come behind me, and I'm sure he's going to tell you about the IEA study much more in detail than I am telling you. But there is a few key tidbits that I do want to highlight from the study, and this is one of them. So as I said earlier, it is important to make sure that we have to include all energy sources when we are designing the electricity and energy mix of the future. But obviously, not all energy mixes are going to result in the same speed and the same cost effectiveness to get us where we need to get. So according to this recent study that the IEA just published in May of 2019, if we were to minimize the use of nuclear power as we move forward in the transition scenarios, the investment that we would need to do would be much, much higher. So this is actual physical dollars or euros that we would need to spend. And of course, these are going to translate in higher electricity costs for all ratepayers or customers everywhere in the world. So, I mean, this cost, they are taxpayers' money and ratepayers' money. So essentially, you and I are going to pay for this. That's what is going to happen. Okay. So now I'm going to put all this perspective in some of the work that we have been doing, and I'm going to quickly take you through the tidbits that we have learned and perhaps give you a few recommendations, both for the nuclear sector and also for the policymakers. So now, when we look at the cost of electricity, there are three components that we rarely take into account. So the first component is what we call the plant level costs, which is typically what you do take into account. This is what is called the levelized cost of electricity that I think most of you are familiar with. Essentially, this is the cost of the steel, the concrete, the human resources, the fuel, everything that is required to actually produce the electricity. Okay, so that is one part of it. But then the next step is what we call the system costs. The grid level cost, which are the costs that are incurred when we are trying to transfer or transport this electricity from the unit that generates it all the way to the consumer that is going to use it. And this is much more than simply the transmission and distribution costs. It has many other components that I will elaborate in a minute. And finally, the third aspect is what we call the social and environmental impacts, which of course are the consequences of any energy source when it comes to the well-being of persons, communities, and is it too loud? Am I not? Okay. Okay, perfect. Very good. And also the well-being of persons, communities, and also, of course, the environment. And as you very well know, very rarely this is taken into account. This will be the costs of air pollution, clean water, obviously climate change, but also there are positive impacts, such as technology development, innovation, etc., that takes place as a consequence of energy sources. So let me maybe talk a little bit about a couple of those things. First of all, levelized cost of electricity. So if we look at the cost of electricity, basically the dollars or euros per megawatt hour produced, nuclear continues to be competitive with several other energy sources. So this is from the recent IEA report, and this is based in 2018 data. This would be for the United States, and then you have data from Europe. So as you see, not only new nuclear is perhaps not so far away from other energy sources, but certainly the long-term operation, basically investing on existing nuclear capabilities, is definitely very competitive and is certainly a good transition mechanism to go from the current fleet of nuclear power plants to perhaps, if we decide to move forward with the next fleet. Now, this is the levelized cost of electricity. However, when you look at the overnight costs of nuclear power plant construction, as you know, we have quite a few bad news to tell. So if you look at the costs that we have experienced in many Western European and maybe in North America, you can tell that certainly we have experienced very high overnight costs and very large delays in many projects. Clearly, this is not good news, and this is something that we definitely need to make sure that the nuclear sector, the nuclear community, needs to change in order to be taken seriously, in order to actually get investors and electric companies to consider nuclear as a choice. Now, but you see here, there are a few good news. There are actually some construction projects that have taken place in the United Arab Emirates, in China, in Russia, that actually are competitive. They are delivered on time and on budget. Why is this? Well, because these projects have continuously been done for many years. Essentially, they are not one of a kind. There is a series of them. So the supply chain, the know-how exists, and each project is better than the next because they continuously do nuclear projects. This is something that I think Mr. Magwood said this, that the only way to get good at building nuclear power plants is build nuclear power plants. So that's kind of the message here. So now let me move about the system cost, which is something, it's a new report, a new study that we released recently in 2019, and it is, I think, very important. So as I mentioned earlier, the system cost is not only the transmission and distribution cost, which they are definitely very important, but it's also the cost related to the fact that we need to put in place spinning reserves and some other infrastructures that need to be ready to jump in whenever variable energy sources are not going to be available. So this is due to the fact that variable energy sources don't always run. If there is no sunshine, if there is no wind, we will not have renewables. And also the fact that they are very difficult to predict. So this means that we need to build in infrastructures, and we need to build resiliency within our grid to make sure that we can have a combination of variable energy sources and base load. So let me give you a little bit, maybe the three lessons learned from this study. Number one, if we overuse variable energy sources within a system, we are going to see quite a few inefficiencies. And I think that if you look at the figure from the left, you're right, you will see that there is over 37% annual excess capacity when we have 75% variable renewables within a system. This means that the residual system really needs to adapt to the variability of the variable energy sources, and this is going to result in quite a lot of energy that is wasted, or we really need which may be the decoupling between electricity and perhaps. Thank you. I'll let you do it. Thank you. Thank you. That's okay. Thank you. Okay. So either we waste this energy or we put in place the means to use it, whether it's storage or we can have the decoupling of electricity and energy, etc. Okay, so second lesson learned is the fact that these energy systems that have very high penetration of variable energy sources are going to result in very high or increased costs. And actually, this is something that we have seen earlier in the presentations that we saw from Germany. And it's also going to result in very high excess capacity that is going to be needed. And of course, excess capacity is increased cost. Basically, we are going to need to invest in additional capacity that, of course, costs money. So, and I wanted you to, I mean, we don't really have time to go through every detail of every graphic, but I want you to realize that, for example, for a 30% penetration of variable energy sources, you would actually see up to 60% more need for capacity. So let me finalize with the third message. The fact that we have these current energy systems where the high penetration of renewable energy sources is making the price of electricity very volatile, very variable, is going to discourage all investors. Essentially, investors don't have any incentive to invest in any generation, because the prices of electricity are artificially low and definitely very volatile and very very unpredictable. So now, let me finalize with one thing that maybe I'm going to skip this because there is not a lot of time, but let me just finalize with maybe a couple of messages for where we see that the nuclear sector needs to go. I mean, some lessons learned, some important things for the nuclear sector. So number one, as I mentioned earlier, the nuclear sector needs to very seriously consider what it is that we need to do in order to be economically competitive. I mean, no matter how many benefits we have, I mean, and we have heard the many benefits that nuclear energy can provide, the bottom line is, if we cannot economically compete with other energy sources, it's not going to happen. So this is number one. Number two, we really need to continue to work on the social contract. We need to make sure that our stakeholders, the public, the policymakers, continue to trust the nuclear energy. And for that, of course, we really need to be serious about providing a forward plan towards the management of used nuclear fuel and nuclear waste. And then also, it is important to make sure that the special attributes of nuclear energy may be recognized in the energy and electricity markets. And of course, this is something that I mentioned earlier. Perhaps we need to redesign, we need to enhance the way these markets are currently operating. And then finally, what I mentioned is nuclear needs to operate flexibly. And of course, we do know that nuclear power plants are flexible. I mean, clearly, we can ramp up and down the use of a nuclear power plant. They do this in France, they do this in Germany, they do this in the US every day. However, it's not only ramping up and down the plant. We need to make sure that this is an economically advantageous business case, okay? So we need to be able to produce electricity and perhaps other energy products in order to have an economic case that makes sense. So finally, these are the messages perhaps for the policymakers. Maybe there are some of them, or there were some of them earlier here in the room. So number one, if we are serious about climate change, about decarbonization, we need to make sure that we include all energy sources, all low carbon technologies in our energy mix. Number two, we do need to recognize system costs. I went very quickly through this, but those are real, they exist, and they are not being allocated to the generation technologies that actually generate them. We, the ratepayers or the taxpayers, are paying for them, but they are not being fairly allocated in the systems. Then the third part is a true-sided one. Number one, we need to make sure that the short-term markets are truly competitive. So we really need to make sure that the most efficient, the most cost-efficient resources are dispatched when they need to be dispatched. But at the same time, we need to build in long-term signals that allow investors to be incentivized to invest and that allow decision makers to think in the long term, because only these long-term signals are going to allow us to make sure that we will have the resiliency and the energy security that we are going to need for the future. And then finally, what I just mentioned, make sure that we design the markets to recognize all the attributes that are going to be important to the market. As I mentioned, not only the energy, but the capacity, the transmission and distribution, the flexibility, and perhaps other attributes. So I think this is more or less what I had to say. And with this, I thank you for your attention, and I will be happy to answer any questions later. Thank you.